You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
It's been fun talking to you guys this morning, 206-421-3776. You want to jump back on the horn? I got to play some of the sound because I want your reaction to it. I hear it and I get like super defensive and I just want to argue. And maybe that's just my nature. So I understand that there's those of you out there who are like, oh, Salk's just a argumentative fellow. You think that I'm just the type of guy who wants to be a contrarian. And maybe there is some truth in some of that. I think that I just try to ask questions and it leads me to look at things differently than some other folks. But I got three or four pieces of sound, two from Greg Olsen, who's a former tight end, played here with the Seahawks last year briefly before being hurt. But he's got some inside knowledge of what's going on. One from Keyshawn Johnson. And one from Colin Cowherd. So let me play these for you. Again, I get super defensive of Pete Carroll, but as you hear these, give me a call, 206-421-3776. I'll take your reaction as well. Start with Greg Olsen, okay? Former tight end, as you know, was with the Seahawks last year. And he and Russ got to know each other. I remember that they were working together in San Diego leading up to the season. So they've spent time together. I would assume then that he's speaking from a place of some knowledge. Here's Greg Olsen talking about Russ's future with the Seahawks.
I've never seen a guy more locked in a walkthrough, a March OTA Zoom. It didn't matter. And he cares about his legacy. He takes great pride in how he's viewed and how he's going to be remembered and the stamp he makes on the league. If he doesn't feel the entire organization is aligned to allow those two things to be consistently, you know, able to be replicated, I think he's gone. I think he cares that much about winning, and I think he cares that much about his legacy that he's not going to mess around and waste prime years of his career.
All right, so Greg Olsen says if things aren't perfect and Russ doesn't feel the whole organization is in line with him, that he could be gone at the end of the year. I don't have sound of it, but I was reading Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, and he was saying that, you know, don't be surprised if the whole I'd accept a deal to these few teams ends up emerging here in the next few weeks to maybe after this season. Especially if they lose to New Orleans. He thinks Russ would like to go there. Okay. Here's a little bit more from Greg Olsen. And again, kind of putting more pressure and blame on Pete Carroll.
I still think the franchise philosophy is always going to limit what the coordinator is able to do.
It's Pete's franchise.
Right? It's a defensive. It's a run game. It's a win the turnover battle. Grind it out. Win the game in the fourth quarter. We don't need to blow anyone out by 40. Like, it's just not their philosophy.
All right. So far, these three cuts, I'm not like totally out on any of this. I think what Greg Olsen is saying is, yeah, things aren't perfect for Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. I agree. Is there tension there? Yes, I think so. Could they eventually break up? Maybe. I think that those are all reasonable questions for us to ask about the future. Is Pete a more conservative type of a coaching philosophy? Yes, obviously. I think at this point, there's nothing that I would specifically disagree with. And in fact, I think a lot of what Pete does has been beneficial for Russell Wilson. So we could disagree on what sort of an effect that has had, but I'm not going to disagree that Pete limits some of what the OC can do in the past. Yeah, he has. He's got a philosophy. He's not wide open, but very few coaches really are. So, all right, at this point, I'm not necessarily disagreeing with any of it. But let me play you these last couple things from Keyshawn and Colin Cowherd. Here's Keyshawn talking about the Seahawks defense.
I look at the Denver Broncos. They've had coaches come in, coaches go out, players leave. When they went to the Super Bowl, they completely dismantled the secondary. They got rid of Harris. They got rid of Tlaib. And then they still maintain a certain integrity on the defensive side of the ball because they brought in other guys that gave them some sort of strength. And I don't know that Pete has done that with the defense. I know they've tried, but they haven't done it. And you wonder, have he lost his fastball?
Oh, there it is at the end. That, you know, questions, sure. But then at the end, we start wondering about Pete's fastball.
Yeah, and he's wondering, and he didn't say he did.
No.
He's just putting the thought out.
Well, he kind of said it. I mean, like, when you're asking it like that, you start wondering, is Pete lost? I mean, that's a leading
That's your
question.
Way of saying it without saying it.
I think that's a way of Keyshawn saying it without saying it. And again, Pete turned 70 years old a couple of weeks ago. Now, all of a sudden, that becomes the place that everybody's pointing. This isn't the first time. This happened about 4 or 5 years ago. Everybody started pointing at Pete and saying he was on the hot seat. It was ridiculous then. I think it's ridiculous now. Colin Cowherd goes a step further.
My wife often says this to me, honey, please stay current. Don't get outdated. Seattle and Pete Carroll at 70 does not feel current. Defensively, the schemes feel outdated. Analytic people have been making fun of the Seahawks offense for years. Pete Carroll is 70, and unlike Nick Saban or Andy Reid, he is now starting to feel outdated.
I think this stuff's unfair from Colin. Now, heads up, I texted him. I tried to see if I could get him on the show this week. He said that he didn't have time this week, so hopefully that's something we can do in the future. Believe me, I would rather debate Colin than just talk about his take. But I hear this, and I hear Keyshawn, and I'm not going to say they're lazy takes, but they feel removed from sitting here. When you're a national voice like both of them are, and you have to look across the league at all 32 teams and all of the sports, etc., I think it's harder sometimes to get the in-depth view of exactly what's happening. You have to use that Occam's razor thing a lot. Oh, Pete's old. They look outdated. That's got to be a connection. Go. And the next thing you know, you're off and running onto a take, whether it's Keyshawn or whether it's Colin Cowherd.
Right. I was going to say that, too. This is really easy for the national voices to just jump to it because that's their job. They need to make this. That's the narrative they have to create. Go with it.
They're not deep in the nitty-gritty every day. And sometimes that does give them an advantage. Hey, the simplest solution is what the most obvious. Okay, maybe that's the case. I don't look at this and think that Pete's old. I don't look at this and think that Pete's done. I don't look at it and think, I don't see scheme issues. I don't see philosophical issues. I see talent issues. I see specific decisions in personnel that were made that are hurting the Seahawks today. So I'll give you my take on this, but again, I'll open it up, 206-421-3776. You can text there at the Mac and Jack's hotline or text line, or you can give us a call. Again, 206-421-3776. As you watch this, as you see some of the issues that have developed with Pete and the Seahawks and Russ, I agree that they may be eventually headed to a bigger problem, but I can't look at it and say it's all because Pete Carroll is old and lost his fastball and he's outdated. The reality is that Pete and Russell, in their own ways, have each held this team together over the last 5 or so years as the talent around them has deteriorated. I don't even see how that's arguable. The talent has gotten worse every year, and yet they make the playoffs every single season. Yet we're going to sit here and crush Pete? Really? If Pete was over in charge of everything, now I know it's his organization and he has more power than anybody else, fine. But Pete's not out there choosing the groceries. Pete's not out there drafting. Pete's not out there scouting. He's not doing those things. The issues that I think the Seahawks have right now are major problems in the draft over the last decade. Free agent choices where I think they've made the wrong call on some guys. Paying Bobby. Trading Frank Clark, and it's not necessarily that Frank Clark himself has done particularly well. It's the idea that they decided to keep the middle linebacker instead of the pass rusher, and the pass rush is so important to the scheme. And then finally, the all-in on Jamal Adams. Now, those two last two may end up turning for them. I sure hope they do. I sure hope Jamal Adams ends up being the player they acquired and not what we've seen so far this year, which has not been worth anything, let alone the amount of money and resources they gave up for him. So I hope that those aren't going to be long-term problems. But I don't look at this and see a scheme problem. I don't look at this and see an offensive problem. I look at this and I see talent. They have drafted 3 high-impact players since 2012. 2 of them are wide receivers. That's it. Since 2012, I got Frank Clark, DK Metcalf, and Tyler Lockett. That's it. No other impact players drafted. Name me one free agent they've really hit on who's come in here and taken off. I mean, like, big time. There isn't one. They've done some nice deals along the way. I like the Carlos Dunlap trade. I like the Quandre Diggs trade. I like things they've done. I don't mean to make this one-sided, but I don't look at this and see an outdated system.
The 719 has an interesting question here for you. Okay. And shout out Colorado Springs, by the way. That's my area code still from when I live there.
Nice.
So. But they said, you did a whole show saying this team doesn't have an identity. That falls on Pete.
Well, I think they are struggling with that. That is a fair point. I will allow that. That is a very good argument, and I'll own some of that. This is not simple. But beyond the identity, I think there's the problem with the talent. Yeah, you're right on the identity issue. And some of that is the tension between Pete and Russ. I think Pete knows what he wants to do. I think he's having some issues trying to get everybody on board with it. But that's a good point. I'll own it. Good argument. 206-421-3776. Let's see. Let's grab Ray in Tri-Cities. Hold on. I got to use the other thing. That button doesn't work. Ray, there you go. Ray, what's up?
Hey, I was just talking to a guy here, and we were thinking one big problem that these guys have is definitely drafting and picking up players who are in one position in college and training them to do something else in the NFL. I think it's pretty hard to get a guy to do that when he wasn't trained in college.
Yeah, Brock mentioned that the other day in regards to Jordan Brooks. Thanks for the phone call, Ray. I appreciate it. Saying, you know, you're asking him to be a coverage linebacker. That's not something he did in college. And so when you see these issues with Bobby and Brooks and Jamal Adams, are you asking them to do things that they're not great at? Maybe. But then why are they here? If you're drafting, if you need a linebacker in that weak side spot who's great at coverage, why are you drafting somebody who's not great at coverage? Why are you asking your coach who's had all that success to make a major change to his scheme because you drafted a guy that does something different? That doesn't make sense. Dan's in Woodinville. Hi, Dan. Good morning.
Yeah, hey. Outdated's not what I would say. I'd say stubborn, but I think what I really wanted to talk about is the talent issue that you brought up. I can't remember where I heard this, but a few weeks back, someone brought up a great take. They haven't hit the draft the way they used to since Pete has been removed from college almost with like insider trading level knowledge on the players.
I've heard that. I don't know whether that's fair. I mean, I've heard that argument made, Dan. It maybe there's some validity to it. I think that's unfair to John Schneider, though.
Sure, but it's still a talent. I mean, what I'm agreeing with you is I think you have a talent issue, and I don't feel like they're acquiring the right players to match the archetypes of what they want to run. So mm-hmm. If I had to pick that, like you're not – they aren't able to source the right type of player that they have. They have archetypes for each position, and they're not getting them.
I think that, you know what, Dan? Well said. They have a type that they like at each position, and they don't seem to be getting the types of players that fit what Pete's scheme is. Why? Where does that disconnect occur? I don't know the answer to it, but I don't know that it's that the scheme is problematic. They don't seem to be getting the right players for it. I'll keep this going with you guys. I appreciate the phone calls. 206-421-3776. A lot of good passion out there today. Curtis is in Issaquah. What's up, man? Curtis.
Hey, how you doing? Sorry.
What's up, man?
No, you're good. That last caller said a good point I was going to say as well. A few things I would say. Of course, I think we are doing a little better when Pete came right out of college. I mean, that's just, he had a little more knowledge. We haven't really hit it since then. But being the old part, I mean, there's Bruce Arians. With one of the oldest coaches with one of the oldest or the oldest quarterback, and that worked. Mm-hmm. I think it's more the mentality that Pete has, and he's sticking to his ways. And that's not really the age. It's just what's worked for him. But number one thing that I'm having a problem with is just Ken Norton Jr. I think he is a little bit outdated, and I think that Pete's allowing him to stay around a little bit longer than
he should. How do you know that? How do you know he's outdated?
Well, just how they've been playing. You know, we had one great game starting the season, which started off good, which gave me all the doubts I thought we were going to have that, you know, was solidified, like, okay, he's there. But it's the disconnect, and I think he has with the players.
Yeah.
There has to be something missing there because they're not playing to the ability where they should. Everyone knows it's a run. We still can't stop the run. It's very predictable, and there has to be a disconnection with the players and him. There has to be something going on, and I've been watching year after year since we haven't made the playoffs. I mean, we progressed one win every single year, and we lost one off the loss column.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally, every year, we, you know, 9-7, then we're 10-6, 11-5, 12-4.
We're getting better. That's, I mean, like, those are good things, right?
I know. That's exactly a good point. We get better, so that's where it comes to Pete. Like, okay, well, he's right there and hanging on.
But don't you think they've gotten better?
And I don't think Ken Norton Jr. is going to be the guy that helps.
I don't know. I have difficulty on the Ken Norton Jr. thing. I appreciate the phone call, Curtis, and I don't know. Look, their defense was bad at the beginning of last year, and it got better. It did. So we don't give him credit for that. We're just going to blame him when things go wrong.
I was going to ask you that. I was like, how much deja vu is that right now?
I think there could be some, and I like the text we got earlier reminding me that, hey, yeah, they might be historically bad in terms of yards, but in the NFL, we win games and lose games based on points, and they're only 10th in the league in points, not 32nd. So there is still some stuff that I think remains to be worked out. I don't think they have enough talent. I think they've got talent issues up and down this roster. I am curious to find out what we'll learn about it over the course of these next three, four, maybe five games, depending on how long Russ is out, how much Russ is covered up versus how much they can scheme to change up. I am awfully curious because I think we're going to learn a lot about the rest of this Seahawks roster. I love these phone calls, man. It was great talking to you guys. Keep the passion up. We'll keep doing this throughout the week. I think there's a lot of good conversation in here as we try to figure out where this franchise is going from here. So good stuff. I'm sorry if I didn't get to you. We will try to get back to the calls again tomorrow, okay? By the way, tomorrow we're getting psyched for Kraken hockey, right?
ESPN.
I hope everybody's pumped. Opening night for real. Seattle Kraken, NHL team, legitimately playing a regular season game in Vegas tomorrow night. That is going to be awesome. Right now, let's tell you what you need to know.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Yeah, it's the story of the day, the week, the month, the year. Russell Wilson will not play this weekend for the Seahawks. First time since 2011 that someone other than Russ will take meaningful snaps at practice and then start an actual football game. I hope it goes a lot better than it did in the preseason for Geno Smith. Russell going to miss 4 to 8 weeks after undergoing surgery on his right middle finger on Friday. Now, we've heard that he's a quick healer. Some reports have suggested it could be on the short side of that estimate, so good. Let's hope he gets back in 4 weeks. If so, he'd only miss 3 games because of the bye. That would be at Pittsburgh, home against New Orleans, and then home against Jacksonville. That would have him back in time to take on the Packers after the bye week. So is that survivable? Maybe. We'll find out. The good news is those 3 teams are not exactly murderer's row here at the NFL, but Geno Smith is going to have to play at a solid level. They're going to need probably an increased presence for the running game, so Chris Carson's health would be paramount. They're going to need a significant improvement for this defense, which, as we said, has given up a historic number of yards so far this year. So can Geno do it? Yeah, I'm skeptical, right? He started a couple games in this league, a couple seasons, but it hasn't been since 2016 that he started with any regularity. We saw him play well for a series or two on Thursday night, but that was also against a prevent defense and a team that was trying to just take up time. So what do he and Shane Waldron do now to try to make this thing work? We're going to learn a lot about this offense and a lot about the rest of the personnel and what Russell Wilson was doing at the line of scrimmage, doing to extend plays, etc., and how much maybe Russell was standing in the way of some of the quicker, easier throws. We're going to learn a lot about what's really been problematic for this offense and its struggle to find a level of rhythm.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, no game for the Seahawks this weekend as they had their mini bye, but hard to say it went particularly well. The division did get away from them by another game. Arizona outlasting San Francisco. They are now still the only unbeaten team in the league. 5-0 are the Cardinals, coming off a 17-10 victory, which puts them 3 games up, of course, here on Seattle. They'll go to Cleveland to take on the Browns this weekend. Cleveland lost a rough one to the Chargers yesterday. As for Trey Lance in San Francisco, he was not good. I watched a lot of that game. He was inaccurate, completed just 15 of 29 passes, lots of tipped balls at the line of scrimmage as well. I've heard it's because his delivery is too long. At least that's some of the conversation in San Francisco, where, by the way, there are people calling for Kyle Shanahan's job. Crushing Kyle Shanahan and saying he doesn't know what he's doing. So if you think you're alone and being upset with your head coach, far from it. In the meantime, Pittsburgh is up next for the Seahawks. They got a big game from running back Najee Harris. Beat the Broncos. May have lost receiver Juju Smith-Schuster, though. He went to the hospital with a shoulder injury. After that, Seahawks have New Orleans, who beat Washington yesterday. Jameis Winston completed only 50% of his passes, but did throw 4 touchdowns. Not sure how sustainable that is in today's NFL with that kind of an accuracy. Big win for the Bills last night on Sunday Night Football. They dominated the Chiefs. Kansas City now 2-3 on the year. Again, a reminder for everybody who thinks the Seahawks should be winning Super Bowls every year. And believe me, I want it. Remember, nothing should be taken for granted in the NFL. And the Kansas City Chiefs are everybody's darling, and yet they sit at 2-3 just like the Seahawks are. Most Super Bowl teams who lose the Super Bowl go on to not make the playoffs the following year. And so for the Seahawks to have sustained what they've done is probably more impressive than we generally give them credit.
here's the third thing you need to know.
All right, to baseball, all four playoff series underway. All of them look like they're going to be legit. White Sox got back into it after losing the first two games on the road. They got a big win at home yesterday to make that 2-1. Home runs from Lurie Garcia and Yasmani Grandal en route to a 12-6 win. Milwaukee, Atlanta, they're even at a game apiece in the National League. Same with the Dodgers and Giants. San Francisco got a Game 1 shutout, then that L.A. offense went to work in Game 2. I do want to talk just briefly about the classic yesterday. Red Sox 6-4 in 13 innings over Tampa. And again, just horrible that they took that runner away from second base and made that game go longer and longer and build the tension. I, for one, was upset and thought it went too long.
We get it. You hate modern fun new baseball.
I hate making up rules as you go along for no good reason to solve problems that don't exist. Yes. I also thought the rule that the Red Sox won on was absurd. How in the world is that considered a ground rule double? I guess that's the way the rule is written. Fine, but that's a bad rule. The ball goes off the wall, then hits the player in right field, then goes over the wall, and the player gets rewarded for his bad defensive play as the man on first has to stay at third with a ground rule double? That's absurd.
If this happened any other time at any other point in the season, we never would have talked about it.
Of course not.
Of course it has to happen in the 13th of
playoff. Well, and somebody was pointing out that this has actually happened to many of the people involved, that it happened in a Rays-Padres game a year or so ago, a couple of years ago, and that Hunter Renfro was the batter at the time.
Oh,
he ended
weird.
Up being in right field for this game.
Weird.
I know, it's weird how that stuff will happen. And anyway, it's just a stupid, stupid rule, but I understand that's the way it had to be applied. Anyway, all four series home have games today. Brewers-Braves at 10. That's coming up in a few minutes. Houston-Chicago 12:30. Red Sox and Rays are going to be essentially out of pitcher, so that'll be interesting at 4 o'clock. And then Dodgers-Giants, 6:37 tonight. Three things you need to know.
Man, so Russell being hurt, obviously we know every Tuesday he goes and visits kids in the Seattle Children's.
Yes.
Who visits Russell?
Yes.
Right? Like, people need to step up for him. They want to share their sympathy. They want to share their thoughts. Somehow, we have been getting all of these Get Well Soon cards for Russell, and one that I did not expect just came through. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, please.
Okay. Hey, champ. Just got back from a meditating surf session and saw the news. Really sorry to hear it. Also saw that you might be back in as early as 4 weeks to see me in Green Bay. You sure that's a good idea? I'm just saying, don't forget to take some time to R-E-L-A-X and do some thinking. I'll be wearing my turquoise jewelry and sending positive vibes your way. Bless A-Rodge.
Wow, Aaron Rodgers. Nice enough to drop it.
R-E-L-A-X. Relax.
Yeah, he just needs Russ to take a little time for himself.
Big surprise.
Very cool. You got any more over there before we talk to Brock in a few minutes?
There's been a few, actually. This one, another, I don't know how it got to us because it, you know, is it not a person, but hey, here it is. Hey, boss. Life was so much better before everybody started calling me Mallet. What did I do to deserve this? I've never been used negatively. But now I'm full of metal, and I just want to go back to the good old days of being useful and healthy. I'll be ready ahead of schedule, though, I promise. Love, middle, don't call me Mallet, finger.
Wow. That's probably the best one for writing, I would
think. Know that, yeah, didn't know that was going
to
happen
just
either.
Writing on its own. Its ability to do that is very impressive. I like the one. What was the one we played? I like the one from Mark Rogers. I think of all the ones we've played, that one's my favorite. Can you read me Mark Rogers again?
Oh,
I really
sure.
Enjoyed
yeah.
It was nice of Mark to send
something. Hey, meal ticket. I mean, Russell, Mark Rogers here. I've reached out to all the national media to make sure they know this setback will be traced directly to Pete. Also, can you write with your left hand? I need your signature on some documents. Thanks in advance. Big opportunities ahead for me. I mean, us. Best. Mark Rogers.
What do you think those documents are he needs help with?
You
got some new branding deals?
Maybe
to work out?
Probably got the official splint of Russell Wilson. I'm sure that's already coming.
The nano splint. It makes you heal even quicker.
Oh, the nano splint.
The
that's
nano
a good one.
Splint. Yes.
That's
all right.
A really good one.
Good stuff. Well, nice job intercepting all of those.
Oh, no. DK.
Oh, DK.
Hey, jeez. Big bro. Haven't slept a full hour since Thursday night, and I can't bring myself to put a shirt on. That second part's unrelated but true. By the way, I'm more than happy to let you sit on my shoulders on the sideline until you're back. Add me on Fortnite. My username's Coolheaded Taunter. See you soon, bro. DK. Wow. That's really, I mean, again, I think they should just all have been settled with a call, but.
Yeah. Well, hey, sometimes it's nice to send a note. It's kind of a personal touch, especially if you write it with your hand, like finger did. That was nice of the middle finger.
Yeah.
All right, Brock next, and then we will rank some of the stupidest things in sports thanks to what happened in that baseball game last night. It's all coming up. Don't go anywhere. It's Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Brock and Salk.
Brock Ewart is my hero.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30.
Brought to you by Precor Home Fitness.
On the Mike Salk Show.
What Brock Ewart says? No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Hey, buddy, here we go on a Monday morning. And this is your wheelhouse. Backup quarterback entering for a couple of weeks. This is your specialty.
Couple weeks?
Well, I guess you didn't have a couple weeks, did you?
No.
No. No. Right. Well, but still.
It was better for the team that I did not. let's be really clear.
Let's be clear.
Yes.
But we got backup quarterback conversation. This is something we haven't had in a decade here in Seattle. But we're going to see a few weeks now of Geno Smith. So what do you think it's like for him to be thrown into this for three games?
I think in some ways, and this is kind of crazy, but in some ways that was much easier Thursday night. No expectations, right? Just go out there and react and just play without any you know, forethought. Just go and cut it loose. And he did. I mean, he far exceeded your text. I don't know if we can share your text, Mike, that you had sent, because you quoted something that I thought was phenomenal, maybe from a movie, but it wasn't.
Oh, yeah.
It was just from your childhood.
Yeah, you can't share that.
That's, I won't share that. I won't share it, but it was just a level of surprise.
Yeah.
And, oh, my gosh, is this really happening? Because it hadn't looked like that in any preseason. Preseason, he hadn't played anything like that. You know, we watched him on the practice field and training camp and everything. He never really looked like that. But he got his chance with the ones. He got his chance to come in when there were no expectations, when you're down big and you can just cut it loose. And even though it was from the -2 yard line and he had to drive it 98 yards, he did. And he did an incredible job. Now comes the hard part. Now comes an opponent that will prepare for you, your strengths and your weaknesses. Now comes a trip on the road. Now comes the weight of, oh, wow, okay, yeah, everybody's kind of dependent on me now, and I got to carry this thing. And I got to, in many ways, flush the reputation of the past that the people have. And I got to flush all of that away and be a huge part of why we win this game. Because, frankly, I think as a team in totality and what you're playing defensively, if Geno doesn't play great, you don't have an opportunity to win in Pittsburgh.
You want Cam Newton?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I want Cam Newton. Let me just be clear. I do. I don't know where he's at with his COVID protocol, if he finally got vaccinated or if he can. I mean, like, there's some outside questions, and I don't know exactly how those get remedied. But in a vacuum, would you take Cam Newton for the next 3 weeks over Geno Smith?
Probably.
Me too. How could you? How would anybody say no to that? I don't understand how the answer could possibly be no to that.
The answer to no that would be, okay, well, how much of a learning curve would he have? How much of this offense could he run? His strength, right, of keeping plays alive and kind of running and doing those things are not really what this team needs. And frankly, Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf need you to push the ball down the field, need you to be a great touch thrower, things that are not his strengths.
But they're not Geno's strength either. Cam Newton was an MVP of this league a few years ago and took his team to a Super Bowl. Geno Smith has done nothing.
I think you're going to see Geno play this week. Before you make that decision, I wouldn't make that decision.
Well, you
got to
bring somebody in, don't you? Because of what happens if Geno gets hurt?
You'll elevate Jake Luton off of your practice
squad.
And
then you're okay with that as your backup quarterback?
I think so.
When Cam Newton's sitting out there unsigned, especially knowing, Brock, that it would take some time for Cam to like get up to speed, why wouldn't you sign him right off the bat?
Yeah, and then Russell's probably back. What have they said, 4 to 8 weeks?
Yeah, 4 to 8. Hopefully it's 4, which would only be missing 3 games. But what if it's 8?
Yeah, well, I think you're going to get a sense and a feel for a few things. Number one, is Geno competent? Because he was more than competent on Thursday night. He was fantastic in the opportunities he had. Is he competent? Does he give us a chance to win this Sunday? He knows the system. He knows his teammates, right? He came in and he operated, Mike, all of that very well. Check with me, everything they like to do. You're absolutely going to give Geno Smith, I think, this first crack at it, this first at bat.
I agree he gets the first crack.
If he is not competent, if it doesn't work, if it is just a mess, and they'll get a feel for that, not just on Sunday in Pittsburgh. They'll get a feel for that this week, right? They'll get a feel. You get an extra little bonus day today, and they'll get a sense and a feel, I think, over the course of this week. And if he falls flat on his face and it's just too much for him and you know, he throws some picks and just doesn't give you any chance at all, I think then you may entertain the Cam Newton
conversation. I am shocked by the text messages on how much people hate Cam. I'd rather take three losses, says the 425, than sign Cam Newton.
Wow.
What? That can't be true. Why? I don't understand.
I think it is a bit of the diva card that people will have a little problem with, that he's made it a little bit about himself.
Well, people say
I think in this state, Mike, I think in the state that you live in, that there's going to be some people that say, as far as his take on the vaccine, everything else, I want no part of that, right? They've certainly crushed the coach on the other side of the mountain. So I think you're going to have a fan base that maybe even wanted to root for him that's going to be turned off by that. And where is that situation? So, yeah, I think that there's probably some of those conversations that have nothing to do with him as a quarterback.
I'd rather lose every game than go with Cam Newton. I just can't fathom that. I mean, I know I like Cam more than the average bear, but that surprises me a little bit. You mentioned learning, and I said this earlier. What do you think we will learn about the Seahawks and Russ and Waldron and Pete over the course of the next month?
Well, you're going to learn about this roster. You're going to learn whether or not you and me, who said before the season began that Russell's the most valuable when it comes to war in the NFL, something we don't talk about, wins above replacement, right? Because what did you and I say and most people say about Russell?
Mm-hmm.
What is his wins above replacement? And like Geno is a replacement level quarterback.
Right.
He showed that Thursday night. He was not so overwhelmed. He was not deer in headlights. He showed you Thursday night he is capable of being a replacement level player. So how many wins is Russell truly worth? If this team can't find a way to win, Mike, it further exposes a lot of challenges on this roster, the weaknesses in a bunch of spots, the lack of depth, defense right now it's been very poor and very, very porous and has not been able to correct it the first month of the season. So, yeah, I think it exposes a ton of conversations if this team is not competitive and doesn't find a way to win and scratch out a couple W's.
Well, and in Geno's defense, he does get three easier winnable games in as far as NFL games go, right? At Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh's not played all that well. New Orleans has not played all that well, and Jacksonville's the worst team in the league.
Yeah, the third one, I totally agree with you. Pittsburgh on the road is still a difficult matchup.
I'm not saying it's easy, but compared to some of the others you've gotten, I mean, getting Pittsburgh, New Orleans, Jacksonville is not exactly murderer's row of the NFL this year.
It's not murderer's row, and you would hope to be able to win one, and if Geno can win two, then you know what? We have a conversation that maybe this roster isn't as bad as a lot of folks believe.
That's going to be a tough look for Russ and some of the way that he has played in this scheme, et cetera, which was designed for him. I don't know. I think we are going to learn a lot about Pete, Shane, Russ, Geno, et cetera, and we'll do so here. And that would be, of all the reasons for me to not want to sign someone like Cam, it would be that. Just to learn. Yep. Just to give us a chance to have a control group to the experiment that we haven't had for a decade because Russ has always been in there.
It's a great point. It's like playing the Lake Chelan Muni. You learn what you can and cannot do.
I learned that I can't do anything. Time for us to go. Thank you, sir. We will talk tomorrow.
Bye.
There you go. Brock Heward with me every single day, 7:45 and 9:30 as well. As you can get your Brock fix for sure. 82% now, by the way, on my poll on Twitter. At the Mike Salk, 82% of you don't want any part of Cam Newton.
Geno over Cam.
Yeah, I don't know. I understand the COVID protocol stuff is maybe confusing this. And I think that there have been some decent arguments made about some of the problems Cam has had with his accuracy and how it would fit in. But the guy was an MVP. He brought his team to the Super Bowl. We're not comparing him to Joe Montana. We're comparing him to Geno Smith. Now, I get the idea of everybody line up behind Geno because he's the next guy up, and so he needs everyone's support. And, yeah, when it comes to the game on Sunday, I'll be rooting for Geno just like anybody. But in the meantime, yeah, I would be interested in having Cam Newton. We were talking to Clayton earlier, and he was bringing up some of the other names. Blake, would you rather have Cam Newton as a show up here or Blake Bortles?
Ooh, yeah, I'm definitely going on Cam.
I can't think about Blake Bortles without thinking of that. What was the show? The Good Place, and how obsessed the guy is with Blake Bortles and the Jaguars. It's so funny. That show is fantastic. If you haven't watched The Good Place, that is worth your time on Netflix. Really, really good.
You have a big backlog of things you've watched. I don't know where that time came from. I just Maybe it's because I only watch It's Always Sunny over and over and over.
Watch the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, so maybe if I branched out
We don't binge anything. We get to watch like maybe a half hour of TV a night. So even hour-long shows, Heather and I have to divide in half just to watch them.
Awesome.
But yeah, no, we try to watch some stuff. Yeah, I don't want Blake Bortles. No thanks. That's not something I'm particularly interested in. You got anything? Any last Russell Wilson well wishes from anybody?
This one is probably the biggest surprise of all.
Okay, who do we have?
Because he said they talked to a half a dozen times since it's happened. But Pete,
yes,
Russell, I told everybody you're one of the greatest healers, and now Clayton won't stop texting me about you fixing his TV. By the way, have you ever thought about playing cornerback? Just kidding, but really, have you? Also, do you want to help me hand out Halloween candy? I don't think the kids like my gum anymore. Let me know about playing defense, though. Always compete, Pete.
Can you imagine Russ jumping in a corner for the next few weeks?
Need to catch.
Hey, I'm just trying to help the team, man.
Taped up hands.
Don't need my hands. Believe me, the cornerback doesn't come anywhere near the ball in this scheme.
No.
So I can just drop back into coverage and do whatever I want. All right, coming up next, on the heels of one of the dumbest rules we've all seen last night in a crazy end to a baseball game, we'll give you the worst rules in sports, ranked. If you got suggestions, you can send them in. Text them to 206-421-3776, Mac and Jack's text line. Mike Salk Show, rolling on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Got a list? Time to put it in order.
Fred Dwumfor's house. Top five meals that I have ever had.
This is Ranked.
To be honest, that list was really biased.
Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Every morning at 9:45 on the Mike Salk Show.
That top 10 list. I'm not buying that.
Ranked.
Well, I guess it depends if you were watching the baseball game last night. I wanted to watch the football game, but I couldn't turn off extra innings. It was getting exciting. And so maybe you saw this happen in the, top of the 13th.
Diaz runs. Kiermaier sends a ball into right center field. That's trouble. And that one's off the base of the wall. Diaz coming around to score. Kiermaier to third. The Rays have taken the lead.
Not so fast.
That's going to be a double. That is a horrible break. And the runner was going. I was just saying that the runner going allows them to score on a double. I think that might.
They're going to take a look.
That hit the top of the wall and go over?
They're not only going to look at that. Isn't it umpire's discretion as to where to place the base runner?
I'm going to get another look at what that ball hit. But starting the runner was the only chance you were going to score playing no doubles.
Such a weird play. We know that if the ball is a ground rule double, right, bounces on the field of play and then over the fence, the runner on first can only advance to third. That's the rule. It's fine. But in this case, the ball bounced off the wall, then the ground, then the right fielder, and then out. So it was the right fielder's fault. And they got rewarded for it by allowing the runner, forcing the runner to stay at third. Makes no sense to this day. I get that that's the rule, but it's ridiculous.
So what's the alternative? You would have it him be at third, just the way that the ended up, I guess?
I think that the umpire should have the discretion of saying he scores based on the fact.
He scores there.
I don't mind that it's the rule normally on a ground rule double. You only get two bases. Yep, that's the rule. Fair. That's fair for both teams. But in this case, the defensive team did something wrong.
Yeah.
And then they got rewarded for it.
Yeah.
That does not feel fair at all. And the umpire should have the discretion to fix that. All right. So with that in mind, the worst rules in sports ranked. The tuck rule is not a rule anymore, or else it would be on this list.
Get that right off the top.
I will admit that at the time in my life, I benefited from the tuck rule. It led to my wife and I ultimately being together. So like, there's a lot of positive vibes wrapped up in that for me. But I fully admit that it is a terrible rule called correctly, just like yesterday was. Okay?
Okay.
Another one that won't quite crack the list for me is the divot, hitting the ball out of a divot. I do think that that's terrible, and I would never hit a ball myself out of a divot, but I don't mind that they punish pros with that stuff. Hey, that's the game. I like that golf is hard for them.
Yeah.
I suck at golf, so I don't mind taking the ball out of the divot.
And every time I've seen it happen on TV, it never really looked like that much of a disadvantage to the player. The times I've seen it,
well,
I'm sure there's a lot that happened.
Lee Westwood this year, unfortunately. He had a real travesty. Ended up losing a tournament to, was it Brooks Koepka? Who did he end up losing to? They were going down the stretch, and he had to hit out of a divot, and it totally ruined his shot. Mm. And probably cost him a tournament. But, like, hey, them's the breaks. Like, I'm kind of okay with that in golf. It's sort of how golf is played. But I would never do it myself, let's be clear. I move that ball right out of the divot.
Yeah.
Not messing around with that. So here you go. Here's my top five with those two out of it. Number five. and I know I'm a grumpy old man on this one, but awarding the whole NHL overtime system is now a problem to me. I had no problems with 5 minutes, five on five, and then call it a tie. I had no issues with that whatsoever.
Okay.
That's the way that sport is played. And I don't know why they needed to make it super exciting for everybody every night with this, with the sort of phony shootout. I just don't need it.
I love a shootout.
Yeah, I bet. That's fine.
I love a shootout too.
I don't need it. I was fine with a tie. I lived with a tie for most of my life, and I was just fine with it.
I wish they did it like the All-Star game. They put a light on him and everything. Just kill all the lights. Just spotlight the goalie. And the...
Don't need that. I'm all good on that one. So that's number five.
Okay, that's number five.
Number four, spot foul only for pass interference.
Yeah.
It is ridiculous. And I know that a 15-yard penalty doesn't necessarily equal the right amount either. And I know people are afraid of giving NFL refs more power, but they deserve it. Let them decide whether it's a 10-yard penalty for interference or a spot foul. If you tackle the guy out there, it should be a spot foul. If it's incidental and it's you're not sure exactly what would have happened, make it a 10-yard penalty and a first down and move on. It's ridiculous to give up 50 yards for a ticky-tack penalty. That's just wrong.
Okay.
Number three, in baseball, not being allowed to appeal when the umpire says you did not check your swing.
Oh, it's the most maddening thing in the world.
So when the ump says that you didn't check, that you were okay, you can appeal and the corner umpire can say, no, you're out. No,
yes.
You swung. But it can't work the other way. It's ridiculous.
Oh, I forgot all about that. I'm glad you brought that
so
up.
So stupid.
It's going to ruin my day.
Cut both ways. Just drives me nuts. Number two. This one's obvious. This is a battle for number one, but I'm going to keep it as number two for now. The NFL fumble through the end zone rule is so ridiculous.
Yeah. Touchback.
You fumble anywhere else totally on the field, and you get to keep the ball if it goes out of bounds. You fumble there, and it goes out of bounds, and it's the other team's ball. It should revert back to where you fumbled. Now, the only reason this is not number one is that I'll admit it is kind of exciting when it happens. As much as I hate it, it's at least like, oh, that's weird. Oh, they're going to get the benefit of that stupid rule. Here you go.
True.
So I'll go number two for that. Number one, I think, is inarguably the worst rule in all of sports because it's unfair. It's specifically and patently unfair to one team, and that is the NFL overtime rule, which allows somebody to win on the first possession.
Yes.
It's better than it used to be. I prefer what you do now with the matching field goals instead of a touchdown, but I just think that you should play a quarter or at least give each team the possession.
Yeah, I think that one's pretty inarguable. I don't know anybody that would say that they like it the way it is, which is insane.
Well, the argument I always hear back is, well, defense is part of the game too. Okay. Well, so is pitching, but we don't end the extra innings after half an inning. You say the other team gets an opportunity to hit.
Yep.
You both deserve the opportunity to be on offense in any game.
But then do you remember Marty Morningweg when he was coach of the Detroit Lions?
Yeah, I remember him.
He opted to give ball to the Bears in overtime.
How's
to start.
Marty doing these days? He's still coaching?
Who does that?
Marty Morningweg and the Detroit Lions. I think you've answered your own question. All right, good stuff. We gotta get out of here. Speaking of hockey tomorrow night. We're talking to John Buchagross tomorrow morning. That should be fun. Looking forward to some good hockey talk as we
Cammy Granato too.
Oh yes, Cammy Granato at 8. She's a legend.
She's
9 o'clock. Yeah. All right, legend. Cammy Granato will be on the show tomorrow as well. We're going to get out of here. Jake and Stacey up next. See ya.